यमुना तीरा वन्नाचारी यमुना तीरा वन्नाचारी हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे राम राम हरे हरे राम राम हरे हरे कृष्णा कृष्णा हरे हरे कृष्णा कृष्णा हरे हरे जय ओम विष्णु पार परमहंस परिप्राजकाचार्य सत्य सी सीमा देशी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी महाराज श्रील प्रभुपाद की His divine grace, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Ki. The divine appearance day, the Hotsava, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Ki. Sri Bhasabhana Bhi Devi Dayataya Ki Jai. Ananta Gauri Vaishnavinda Ki. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki. Prems Gahosi Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Adaita Kiradha Sri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vindagi Sri Siradha Krishna Kokopina Samakunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhanagi Sri Vrindavandamagi Sri Maturvedamagi Sri Jagannatha Purigi Sri Jagannatha Swamigi Sri Jagannatha Balaram Subhadrigi Munamahigi Munamahigi Ganga Devigi Bhakti Devigi Srimati Tulsi Devi ki, Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda ki, all glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Magnatimirandasya Gyananjana Salakayam Chakshujunmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manubhistam Srapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Svapatantikam Bandeham Sri Guru Sri Tathapata Kamalam Sri Garoma Vaishnavamsa Sirupam sagrajatam saguna ragunatam nitam tam sajivam sadavetam savadutam parisana sahitam si krishna chaitanya devam si radha krishna padam saguna lalita si visakha nitam stya Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vastaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamaniti Namani Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharani Nirvasesa Sunyavadi Vaskita Desatarani Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vastaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Iti Namani Shri Barsa Banabi Devi Dayataya Kripabdaye Krishna Sambandha Vigyana Dayane Bhavave Namaha. We are all born into the darkness of material ignorance, and today we sit here with our eyes closed shut. But by the mercy of His Divine Grace, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami, and His greatest disciple, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, they have come to us in our darkness and forced us to open our eyes to the blazing torchlight of transcendental knowledge. So therefore, on this auspicious day, we bow down before the lotus feet of our spiritual masters, and we summon up all the humility that we can muster to express our gratitude today. Hare Krishna. So today is a double whammy. It's two auspicious days happening together. And it didn't happen capriciously either. It was designed. It was designed by Srila Prabhupada. Because 40 years ago today, Srila Prabhupada had just been given the paperwork for the temple had just finished, just closed, and I can read a letter to that effect later on. And the auspicious appearance day of his spiritual master arose. So, taking advantage of that auspicious day, he wanted to have all the devotees come to the temple to celebrate this auspicious day of Bhaktisiddhanta's appearance, and to have it coordinate. Coincide with the appearance of Bhaktisiddhanta and the arrival of the devotees at the new temple. There's a few devotees who are here. I don't know if Sukadeva is here, but I spoke to Mother Ujula, and she was here on the day, and it was all hush-hush. Nobody really knew, because the real estate negotiations were going on. I'll explain that later. First, we'll get to the solemn part of the ceremony, the glorification of our Param Guru, in your case, many people are Param Param Guru. That means sometimes you say grandfather, and then the next one down the line, the great-grandfather, and then the great-grandfather. So as they become removed from you, they become more and more merciful. So I have a Param Guru, you have the Param Param Guru. Bhaktisiddhanta is your Param Param Guru. So we're all part of the same family, spiritual family, initiated by Srila Prabhupada. So today is a celebration in honor of Bhaktisiddhanta. I thought it would be appropriate that we read the poem that Srila Prabhupada wrote to glorify Bhaktisiddhanta. How much more appropriate could it be in the parampara than to read the poem that Srila Prabhupada wrote? So I would like to do, instead of having us read collectively, I would like to have seven volunteers, it's the eight stanzas of verse, seven volunteers to read one verse apiece. And then we'll give the talk today regarding these eight verses. And I raised my hand for verse number one. And so who will take verse number two? You want to take verse number two. Who wants to take verse number three? You three, and then you four. Who else? You five. Come on, we got two more Matajis. Let's reserve it. Two more Matajis back there. Six and seven and eight we have. Any more Matajis back there? Come on. One Mataji. All right, there we go. Eight, seven, and then one more for eight. So, you can do eight. Now I want you to be, today I want you all to be thespians. That means actors, dramatic. This is a poem. It has to be done feelingly. And give honor to Bhaktisiddhanta. This poem was written by Srila Prabhupada in 1936. He was in Bombay, and the poem was it was very ecstatic. I'll explain about the poem in a minute. Adore, adore ye all, the happy day, blessed than heaven, sweeter than May, when he appeared at Puri, that holy place, my Lord and Master, his divine grace. Number.
Oh, my Master, the angelic angel, give us thy light, light up thy candle. Struggle for existence, a human race, the only hope is divine grace.
This day we are, a going astray. Save us, Lord, a fervent prayer. Wonder thy ways, turn our faith. Adore thy feet, and divine grace.
Forgotten Krishna, we fall in so, paying most heavy the illusions told. Darkness around, all untraced. The only hope is divine grace.
Message of service, help us grow. A faithful life of Chaitanya Bodh, unknown to all, is fully of grace. That should give to divine grace.
Absolute is sentient. Thou hast proved in personal calamity. Thou hast moved. This gives us a life, anew and fresh. Worship thy feet, your divine grace.
The line of service, as drawn by you, is pleasing and healthy, as all men do. The oldest of all, but a new dress, miracle done, your divine grace.
Jaya. So let us all recite it in unison now. Adore, adore ye all, the happy day, blessed than heaven, sweeter than May, when he appeared at Puri, that holy place, my Lord and Master, his divine grace. O my Master, the evangelic angel, give us thy light, light up thy candle, struggle for existence, a human race, the only hope is divine grace. Misled we are, all going astray, save us, Lord, our fervent pray, wonder thy ways to turn our face, bow thy feet, his divine grace. Forgotten Krishna, we fallen souls, paying most heavily the illusion's toll, darkness around, all untraced, the only hope is divine grace. Message of service thou hast brought, a healthful life as Chaitanya wrought, unknown to all, it's full of grace, that's your gift, your divine grace. Absolute is sentient, thou hast proved, in personal calamity thou hast moved, this gives us a life anew and fresh. Worship thy feet, your divine grace. Had you not come, who would have told the message of Krishna forceful and bold? That's your right, you have the mace. Save me a fallen, your divine grace. The line of service is drawn by you. It's pleasing and healthy, like the morning dew. The oldest of all, but in a new dress. Miracle done, your divine grace. Jai Srila Prabhupada. So when Prabhupada wrote this poem, it was in 1936, and Srila Prabhupada was involved in doing business in Bombay. So he was saying here, adore, adore ye all the happy day, blessed than heaven, sweeter than May. Because it was a great thing for the world to have the birth of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. He was born in 1874, and the name he was given was Bimala Prasad. Now in Jagannath Puri, the magistrate of Jagannath Puri temple was supervisor and head man was Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who was the father of Bhaktisiddhanta. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur had many children, maybe 10, at least 10, maybe more. And Bhaktisiddhanta was the fourth son of Bhaktivinoda. And he was given the name Bimala Prasad. Now in the Puri temple, as you, some of you have been lucky to get in, when they take a prasadam from Jagannath, they bring it to the demigod, to Bimala. So the prasadam is called Bimala Prasad. So there was a theme that Bhaktivinoda had. I don't know the names of all of his children, but I know another one of Bhaktisiddhanta's brothers was called Lalit Prasad. It was Bimala Prasad, Lalit Prasad, could have been Hanuman Prasad, I don't know how many Prasads there were. But there were a lot of children, so we kept them all in the Prasad family. So, it was very auspicious that when Bhaktisiddhanta Bimala Prasad was born, because Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was the bridge between the old-time religion and the new-time religion. Or the worldwide preaching of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. See, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he did not preach some kind of indigenous religion. It wasn't some Bengali movement. From the time of Lord Chaitanya, he was saying, Prithivite acetato nagarari gram saprata prata hoi be moana. That in every town, in every village, not just the towns in Bengal, not just the towns in Puri, but in every town, in every village, the chanting of my holy names would be. After Mahaprabhu left, the disciplic succession was restricted to preaching throughout the towns and villages throughout India. But with the coming of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he started to translate and write the Vaishnava philosophy in English. Because the English were occupying India at that time. So he wanted to preach to the English people. He just did not want to speak, preach to the Bengalis and the Oriens and the, you know, the different people of India. He wanted to preach to, the British. And he wanted to preach all over the world. So Bhaktivinoda, in the mood of Advaita Prabhu, who prayed to the Lord for the coming of Lord Chaitanya, Bhaktivinoda prayed to the Lord that he would be sent someone to assist him in this preaching. And Bhaktivinoda realized that his fourth son was the answer to that prayer. Because when Bhaktisiddhanta was born, there was auspicious things. His umbilical cord was around his neck, like he was a Brahmin. And that would portend to great controversies that would come in the future when Bhaktisiddhanta introduced Brahminical initiation to those who weren't born in the family of Brahmins. And this caused a great havoc. And we'll talk about that later. But in the beginning, right from the very beginning, Bhaktivinoda could realize that his son was, a special, a ray, it was called the Ray of Vishnu. Prabhupada called him the Vaikuntha man. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj, the Vaikuntha man. So, he was born in an auspicious place, as Prabhupada says in the poem. Adore, all the happy day. Sweeter than heaven, blessed than heaven, sweeter than May. When he appeared at that holy place, right? And most auspicious place, Purushottam Kshetra. Considered by many to be the most sacred place. So sacred that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made it his headquarters. Mahaprabhu could have stayed in Navadvip, could have gone to Vrindavan, he could have gone to Prayag or Rishikesh, or some place like that, but Mahaprabhu decided to make his headquarters in Puri. So most of his life, more than half of his life took place there in Puri. So this is the holy place, the place of Jagannath. Jagannath is the most ancient deity that was introduced, many millenniums ago. So it is carried on in Puri to this day. And Srila Prabhupada introduced Jagannath worship all over the world in keeping with the Pratiti Teya Te Dato Nagarari Sarayuna. Moranam! The Prabhupada wanted Jagannath, you know, worship to go on all over the world. Because worship of Lord Jagannath, Jai Jagannath, Jai Jagannath, this is the holy name of Lord Jagannath. You know, he wanted that to take place all over the world. So anyways, so Bhakti Siddhanta was born, and one of the anecdotes is that when he was a young baby on his mother's lap, the Rath Yatra cart, if those who have been to Puri and visited some of the holy places, you'll see that Bhakti Vinod's house, they have keep it there. It's right on the grand procession road. So there's one procession, there's one road that goes from the Shingadwara gate to the Gundicha. The Gundicha temple down at the other end of the grand procession road. So right along the road, halfway between the road, there's where Bhakti Vinod's house was, and there, that's where Bhakti Siddhanta was born. So when the Rath Yatra was coming, Bhakti Vinod's wife had the child in the house, and the Rath cart came to the house and couldn't proceed. Sometimes that happens in Puri. The cart can't move. It can't go forward or backwards. It happened in the time of Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu used his head to move it. It happened in, this time also, that the chariot wouldn't move. So Bhakti Vinod's wife came out with the newborn child, and brought him up to the Rath cart, and it said the garland had fallen off Jagannath and fell onto the newly born, auspiciously onto the newborn baby. So this was very, considered very auspicious. And Bimla Prasad was an eager student, and he would emulate his father, and it is said that he memorized the entire Bhagavad Gita by the age of 7. When he was 7 years old. Anybody have a 7-year-old kid here? 7-year-old? I have a 7-year-old grandchild. He doesn't know one sloka. Bimla Prasad had memorized 700 slokas. He knew them all by the time he was 7 years old. So this was an auspicious sign. Bhaktivinoda knew he had a ray of Vishnu here. And so he engaged Bimla Prasad in assisting him in publishing. He taught him all the ins and outs of publishing. Because although Bhaktivinoda Thakur was the magistrate of Jagannath Puri temple, and he was a magistrate, he occupied the highest position in the British rule, that a non-British, citizen could occupy. The post that Bhakti Vinod occupied was the highest position that could be awarded someone who was born in India. Because the British, they wanted to keep all the positions locked up at the top. They didn't want any uppity Indians trying to, take over, the governor of Bengal or something like that. So he could be a magistrate. So Bhakti Vinod was a magistrate, and that included managing Jagannath Temple. And Jagannath Temple is like, from a commercial standpoint, it's like, the Sony manufacturing company here in Culver City. In Culver City, as Sony, Benedicts, the street gets fixed. And all the other gentrification of the other side of Venice Boulevard goes on because of Sony. So the Jagannath Temple, that's a mundane example, but in Jagannath Puri, the main, economic engine that runs the city is the temple. And you go there to the Sringa Gate, and you see, hundreds and hundreds of wallahs, they're all selling prasad. They're all selling prasadam that supposedly comes from, the kitchen. And you see the kitchen there in the Puri wall, and the walls are all black. The windows are all black because it says that the kitchen never shuts down. 24 hours a day, the kitchen is running. And the wood, they take the wood from the Rathiatra carts every year. When they disassemble the Rath carts, they use that wood for cooking prasadam for the Jagannath. And the fires are always going. The 56 preparations are being offered every day. And so so you can understand that it's a very responsible position to manage the temple, the most ancient temple in India. Lakhs and lakhs of rupees are given. People are giving rings, emeralds, rubies, diamonds, deeds to the land. You know, everyone, their firstborn child, everything is offered to Lord Jagannath, you know, all the time. And there's a very lucrative temple. So the responsibility there, it couldn't be managed by the British because they don't know. They think it's a Buddhist temple. They think Lord Jagannath is Lord Shiva. They don't know anything about it. So they just kind of say, well, you take care of it. The person who's the magistrate, that's your job. You know, manage the temple. Keep these Brahmins in line. We don't want any squabble and fight to go along. We just want to, you know, exploit the rest of the country and, you know, you guys can have this opiate of your religion, you know, to yourself. So this was the way, you know, that the, so Bhaktivinoda had a very, very responsible, but beside all that responsibility of taking care of the government, you know, magistrate being a judge, magistrate is being a judge. You have to sit every day in court and pass judgment on different legal matters. He had to take care of the temple. He had, you know, 11 kids and his family, and he published books, you know, prolifically. All the, you know, you look in the songbook, you'll see all these songs that were written by Bhaktivinoda. There's so many books that were written by Bhaktivinoda in Bengali, in Oriya, and in English. That was his main thing, that he could preach in English. You know, this was a sign of a progressive person. And this was the idea that Bhaktivinoda had, that, you know, he didn't want the British to look down their nose and think, oh, this is some kind of a primitive religion for, you know, Aborigines and for indigenous Indian people. This was, you know, Bhaktivinoda saying, no, this is the world religion. This is the world, this is the religion for everyone. This is the world Sankirtan movement. It's for everyone. So he preached and wrote in English prolifically. So besides all that business, you know, he needed this assistance. So he was benedicted by his son, you know, Bhaktisiddhanta, Bimala Prasad. Bimala Prasad, the three names that we have for for Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati is Bimala Prasad. That was his name at birth. And then we took initiation from Bhakti Gorkashodas Babaji. He was given the name Sri Barsabhanabhi Devi Dayata. So that was the second name. And the other name, Siddhanta Saraswati was the name he went by. That was a name that was given to him when he was a young man because he wrote a famous book on astrology. In fact, this book that Bhaktisiddhanta wrote was so famous that it changed all the astrological viewpoints in Indian astrology. It calculated the astrological calculations were made in accordance to the sun instead of the moon. And so he wrote this this very important book. It's called this Siddhanta. Siddhanta, yeah, right. Surya, Siddhanta. Famous book. And then he was given the name, the title Siddhanta Saraswati. And then when he eventually took sannyas, he went by the name Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj. So adore, adore all the happy day, blessed in heaven, sweeter than May, when he appeared at Puri, that holy place, my Lord and Master, his divine grace. So then, verse number 2. O my Master, the evangelic angel, give us thy light, light up thy candle. So Srila Prabhupada addresses Bhaktisiddhanta not as an angel, only an angel, but as an evangelic angel. This is a very important distinction, because there's many holy men in India, you could call them angels, they're very saintly characters. But for someone to be an evangelic angel, Evangelic, Prabhupada using the word as someone who spreads the good news. In the dictionary they say is zealous, a person who's zealously spreading the good news. He's evangelism sometimes has a bad connotation now because we are affiliated with people, Bible bashers out on the street. But actually the word means someone who's spreading the good news. You know, I think they use that word in the Bible. They talk about the angels. They came during the birth of the baby Jesus, and they spread the good news. They were evangelic. So Prabhupada addresses the spiritual master as the evangelic angel. It means that Prabhupada appreciated that Bhaktisiddhanta Prabhupada was not just a saintly person, but he was a person who was spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world. You know, so Bhaktivinoda Thakur had his son Bimla Prasad help him, and Bhaktisiddhanta, when he met Srila Prabhupada, he told him, he gave him his life's work. At the first meeting that we have, you know, and a lot of times, people and different institutions, they like to celebrate the birth of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, and on this day it's very appropriate. But actually, the perfection of glorification of Bhakti Siddhanta is 1922, when Bhakti Siddhanta and Srila Prabhupada met for the first time. This is the most significant, spiritual significant time, because the preaching of Krishna consciousness was inspired in Srila Prabhupada by Bhakti Siddhanta, and at that time he made up his mind, you know, because Bhakti Siddhanta had told him, he noted that Prabhupada was, you know, eloquent speaking in English, master, he could speak nicely, just you see the poem that Srila Prabhupada wrote in second language in English, and so Bhakti Siddhanta said, you should dedicate your life to preaching this Chaitanya cult all over the world. Because at that momentous meeting in 1922, Bhakti Siddhanta was a holy man in Calcutta, and Prabhupada was a Vaishnava from his childhood. His father, Gomohan Day, was a Vaishnava, and brought him up to worship the deity, gave him Radhakrishna deity, gave him the Rath Yatra card, helped him celebrate the Rath Yatra in his neighborhood. He would go to the Malik's temple, the Govinda temple, which you can go to today, you know. Every day he would go to have darshan. He would spend sometimes hours just gazing upon the deities. So Prabhupada already had that basis of Krishna consciousness. But here, you know, Bhakti Siddhanta was saying, you should utilize this gift that you have for speaking English and speak to the rest of the world. Speak all over the world. Spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. So this is the momentous, you know, occasion when the evangelic angel, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, met Srila Prabhupada and inspired him to preach Krishna consciousness. And Srila Prabhupada said that he was, you know, he was part of Gandhi's national movement. And the business of Gandhi's national movement was to try to drive the British out of India. And part of their strategy was to, you know, boycott all the British cloth. And everybody in India, they wanted them to spin their own cloth, hand-spun, khadi cloth. And another part of their strategy was to refuse the British distinction of education. In fact, so give up your degrees. Don't call yourself an MA, BA, PhD, and if you're in college, give it up, you know, in a protest. So Srila Prabhupada was in that position, and he gave up his degree. When the time came for him to be awarded his degree, he didn't stand for it. He didn't show up. That was an insult, you know, after, you know, being educated in the British system, and then it comes time to award them their you know, degree. Yeah, we don't want it. We'll walk away and spin our cloth and, you know, protest like that. So Srila Prabhupada, he said, when Bhaktisiddhanta made that proposal to me, I said, but we have to free India first. First we have to free India. Because Prabhupada was thinking, oh, who's going to take us seriously, you know, if we're just a beggar nation? we're just a nation under British rule, who will take us seriously? So like this, Prabhupada said, I was just giving some, you know, giving some kind of objection, but he said, in my heart, I didn't believe it. In my heart, I wasn't convinced that, you know, we had to save India. But I said it anyways, just so I could say something, you know, which was sounded intelligent. And Bhaktisiddhanta said, we don't have any time for this. We've got no time for saving India. We've got to engage in a more important, a more urgent business. A more urgent business. And the classic example is the Titanic is sinking. And the foolish people, they are arranging the furniture on the deck. They are decorating their rooms. They are looking for a new color scheme for their drapes. Meanwhile, the Titanic is sinking. You know, the intelligent person, man the boats. Help out the women, the children, get them in the boats. Man the boats. The foolish person is rearranging the furniture on the deck. You know, rearranging their room. So this is the materialist. We're freeing India. Meanwhile, the whole world is going to hell in a handbasket. But we're going to free India first. You know. So that was Bhaktisiddhanta addressed by Srila Prabhupada as the evangelic angel. Light up thy candle. Struggle for existence, a human race, the only hope. His divine grace. So, Prabhupada also was instructed by Bhaktisiddhanta in line with this evangelic angel understanding to print books. This is why, you know, every morning here at the temple, we read out the book scores because it's a very important thing. You know, very important thing to keep this alive, to keep the spirit of book distribution and book printing. And Savasta's made it his, you know, priority in life as a BBT trustee to make sure that Srila Prabhupada's books were printed and published. And Srila Prabhupada, he was very adamant about this. He, in 1970, he created the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust. And in regard to this, Marge just died. You know, Marge, Shruti's mother, just passed away a couple weeks ago. So this mother of one devotee met Srila Prabhupada in Bombay, and Prabhupada sat down with her. This was 1971, and sat down with her and laid out all the legal ramifications for the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust. And the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust is very special. The people that Srila Prabhupada appointed to the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust weren't necessarily sannyasis, weren't necessarily temple presidents, or even GBC men. You know, they were people that they could have been, you know, but they were specifically men who he entrusted with the task of keeping the printing of his books alive. You know, keeping that as a forefront of our preaching mission. You know, so sometimes the original members of the BBT, they weren't you know, necessarily high up in the echelons of ISKCON, but they were book printing people. They knew book printing, they knew book distribution, they appreciated Srila Prabhupada's, you know, translations and the importance of it all. They grasped it, and Srila Prabhupada appointed them accordingly. So the evangelic angel that Prabhupada is designating here, Bhaktisiddhanta, as the evangelic angel, because he told Prabhupada, if you ever have any money, extra money, print books. You know, so when Prabhupada set up the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust, he said, all the books are sold and distributed, and the money that comes in, half the money goes to printing the books, to reprinting the books. Don't interfere with the printing of the books. Don't get a bunch of money and start spending it. And the other half, you spend on, you know, opening temples, financing temple purchases. But don't take any money from the printing of the books. You may want to purchase 10 different temples, and you think, oh, we'll take some money from the... No, Prabhupada said, no, keep the printing of the book money there, temple opening for temple purchasing on the other side. Don't let them mix. So because the evangelical movement was there, and this is why the Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he was, you know, some can say he was iconoclastic. He broke the mold. Because you have to understand, before this time, in the early, 19th century, from the time after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the profile of a sadhu was someone, especially a Gaudiya sadhu, they didn't even wear long, they didn't wear the Brahmin thread, as we see in the case when we see pictures of Gorkha Shordas Babaji, we see in the pictures of Jagannath Das Babaji, Goswami paintings. They were in these little short white dhotis, they're chanting their beads, they're very austerely living in a holy place, they don't even carry the danda. Bhaktisiddhanta introduced so many things that were not acceptable for a sannyasi before. Bhaktisiddhanta, he wore Western clothes. I mean, he always wore a dhoti and a kurta like that, but sometimes you see Bhaktisiddhanta, he has a double-breasted top coat on, and he's got shoes, like little loafers. He's wearing loafers and a double-breasted, and he has a turban on, and his glasses, distinguished look like that, and he's wearing those, and he's greeting the governor of UP. He's the governor of, Uttar Pradesh, or some other British ambassador has come, and he is there greeting him. And he gets out of his convertible. He's a sadhu riding in a convertible. Now this is outrageous. Sadhu riding in a convertible, wearing loafers, in a double-breasted sport coat, with a turban. This is iconoclastic. But Bhaktisiddhanta did this, because he wanted to preach Krishna consciousness all over the world. Previous to Bhaktisiddhanta, it was considered by the rank and file sadhus all over India that you can't go across the ocean, because if you go across the ocean, you become pure, contaminated. So how can you reconcile this, that you can't go across the ocean? This was embraced by many sadhus, They wouldn't go, they said, well, if you go over to Mletchadesh, then you become contaminated, polluted. So therefore they all stayed in, Bharatvarsh, India. So how to reconcile this with Prativitaya Chaitato? How to reconcile not going over the ocean, but spreading the holy names to every town and every village? So Bhaktisiddhanta, he knew that this going across the ocean, this was not a Vedic, this is not a Vedic injunction. This was some kind of sentimental injunction. It wasn't Vedic, and so he, from the very beginning, he wanted to carry on the work of Bhaktivinoda, printing the books in English, and he began to send his disciples over the ocean. He sent his disciples to Paris. Sent them to London, sent them to Burma, and in this way he was beginning the movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he inspired Srila Prabhupada so much so that when Prabhupada first met him in 1922, and later on the letter he received in 1936, the same instruction was reiterated. The instruction was, Prabhupada wrote him a letter, and he expressed his feeling of inadequacy, and his feeling that, all my God brothers, they are sannyasis, they are opening so many mats. Well, I need some special kind of instruction. I want some special instruction. Something that I have to do for you personally. And so Bhaktisiddhanta wrote back the same instruction. You dedicate your life to preaching Krishna consciousness in the English language. So in that, Srila Prabhupada, had his instruction. 40 years later, Prabhupada said, better let than never. the devotee said, it took 40 years. Prabhupada said, better late than never. 40 years later, he kept that instruction, held it, to his heart, and he, for our good fortune, in 1965, he came. So the next verse, 3 and 4, misled we are all, going astray, save us, Lord, your fervent prayer. One of the right ways to turn our face, adore thy feet, your divine grace. Forgotten Krishna, we fallen souls, paying most heavenly the illusion's toll. Darkness round all untraced, the only hope is divine grace. These next two verses are describing, you know, us, you know, that we're fallen and misled. We're misled and we're fallen. And this is a situation in the material world. We're fallen, you know, we're fallen from the spiritual. This is through another, Prabhupada's speaking a poem, but he's there's a lot of philosophical content within these words. Prabhupada's saying we're fallen, we come down, we're fallen from the highest platform, you know, and Prabhupada explained later in the Chaitanya Charitamrita Prativi, I mean, Erupe Brahmana Bhomite Kana Bhagavan Ajeev Guru Krishna Kripa Vai Bhakti Lata Beej. You know, that we get the spiritual spark, the seed from the spiritual master, Guru Krishna. You know, and when we water it, we're chanting and hearing, then it grows to the bhakti lata. You know, it grows up to be a strong plant. So, Srila Prabhupada was explaining to us, we are fallen, we are misled, but for somehow or other we have the benediction of having such a great guru, a param guru as Bhakti Siddhanta. And he engaged in all these iconoclastic things, driving the car, western dress, and he took sannyas in front of a mirror. This is another controversial thing Bhakti Siddhanta did. Bhakti Siddhanta was such a strong devotee, and when it came time for him to take sannyas, he looked around and he said, there's nobody here, there's nobody around. He wasn't being puffed up about it either. He was saying, there's nobody around, you know, who can give me sannyas. Well, I can take, Gokasura has passed away already. I can't take sannyas from him. And who else can I take sannyas from? Yeah. So, the whole taking of because Bhaktisiddhanta, as I explained before, he was so renowned that he was given the title Siddhanta Saraswati. You know, he was so renowned that he was reading and, you know, memorizing the Bhagavad Gita, writing books, you know, in English, in Bengali, in Orissa, so many different languages, you know, reading, writing. He was glorified as a great scholar in mathematics, in physics, in astronomy, astrology. You know, he was hired by great kings to instruct their children in these different subject matters. When the time came for him to take initiation, Bhaktivinoda said, you take initiation from Gorkhasura. Gorkhasura, that was Babaji, was a saintly person, but he didn't even read or write. He was illiterate. Can you imagine that? Gorkhasura was illiterate. He didn't read and he didn't write. And Bhaktisiddhanta here is reading everything and writing everything. And Gorkhasura is saying, no, I can't accept you as a disciple. Because Gorkhasura didn't accept disciples. So this is the test Bhaktivinoda was giving to Bhaktisiddhanta. Bhaktisiddhanta came again. You know, Gorkhasura said, I will accept you when Mahaprabhu instructs me. So Bhaktisiddhanta went away, came back again. Will you accept me? He has not told me yet. He hasn't told me yet. So Bhaktisiddhanta said, all right, my life is finished. I cannot fulfill the order of my father. Because for all practical purposes, Bhaktivinoda was his spiritual master. You know, but the formality of accepting a spiritual master, Gokashore, was there. So he said, if I can't follow the orders of my spiritual master, I'm going to end my life. So at that, Gorkhasura said, all right, wait a minute. Okay, I'll accept. I'll make an exception. I'll accept you. So Gorkhasura, you know, passed away. And Bhaktisiddhanta, he was not a sannyas at that time. And they used that against him. When Gorkhasura's Das's body was there, in Navadvip, all the Babaji's came out of the woodwork and they all said, no, we should take Gorkhasura over here. to put him in samadhi. Because in India, when the body is put in samadhi and there's a tomb, then a lot of pilgrims come to that place and, you know, pay obeisances, and they give money. They give money. And this is what these sadhus were after. These Babaji's, they wanted the money. The money was the honey. So they wanted him to put Gorkhasura there, not because they had reverence for Gorkhasura's Babaji, but they wanted the money. You know, because they were, you know, debauchees. So, there was a big controversy, and the samadhi was being delayed. As we know from Prabhupada, it has to be done expediently. So they were arguing, no, he should be over here, and the other one was saying, no, I claim him, and no, it's for me, he should be holy. And so they're going back and forth like that, and nobody could resolve it, because Bhaktisiddhanta was in Calcutta, and he received the message, you know, and he made a, you know, beeline for Navadvipa, and he intercepted the argument, and he came in, you know, like a lion. He's called the Shinga Guru also, lion. Like, so he said, I will take care of the body of, Gorkhasura Das Babaji. He said, no, you are not a sannyas. You are not a sannyas. You are only a brahmachari. You can't take the body. You know, we are Babajis, we are sannyasis. And Bhakti Siddhanta said, you are sannyasis in name only. I am a brahmachari, naishtiki. From birth. Naishtiki brahmachari. Which one of you out there in the audience has not had an illicit relationship with a woman in the last year? Silence. In the last month? Silence. In the last 3 days? Silence. All the Babaji's turned away and walked to the corners. And like this, Bhaktisiddhanta took charge of the body and he made the samadhi. So he called their bluff. And they were afraid to lie in front of him because he knew he would be destroyed. So anyways, those next two verses are about us. Fallen and forgotten. Now the last four verses. Messages of service thou hast brought a healthful life as Chaitanya wrought. And unto all, it's full of grace. That's your gift. Your divine grace. So, the gift that we receive from Bhaktisiddhanta, and the gift that Srila Prabhupada wanted to offer back to Bhaktisiddhanta, as Subhas said this morning, which was there in the Leelamrita, I think, that on this auspicious day, Prabhupada wanted to make a gift to Bhaktisiddhanta. But he said, I have nothing. He said, I only have my disciples. And he proceeded to read the names of all his disciples to Bhaktisiddhanta. So he said, these are my gifts to you. So in this way, it was a very heartfelt thing. So that was Prabhupada's gift.
Are there devotee servants photographs?
Oh yeah, some of them, yeah. We'll get to that in a minute. So the most important verse in the poem is number 6. And this was confirmed by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. When he heard this verse, he said, ah, I like this verse very much. In fact, when he heard the poem, he said, print it, immediately, publish it. He said, and anything he writes, publish. So in this way, the poem was lost. It was in obscurity. Later on in this little package that you have, you'll see there's a lecture. In a conversation, room conversation that's recorded. And it talks about Prabhupada. He said, I didn't know where the poem was. It was lost to in obscurity. And he said the Gurudas was going through these old copies of The Harmonist, these old in London, and he discovered the poem. And Prabhupada was happy to see it again. So, but when Bhaktisiddhanta heard this number 6, absolute is sentient. So precise. The three words. Absolute is sentient. That encapsulates our whole philosophy. That God is a person. Absolute is sentient. The absolute truth has senses. He's a person. He's a perfect person. And this is what makes, Gaudiya Vaishnavism, as preached by Srila Prabhupada, the perfect religion. It's the religion that that encompasses all other religions. It is the religion that makes it possible for us to appreciate God. Because God, being a person, can accommodate and can reconcile all these discrepancies. There's some people that lose faith in their religion because they can't reconcile certain things. You know, how could a just God make something like, the earthquake in Haiti happen? What did they do? What are those poor people? Why do they deserve that? The earth shakes and 100,000 people, annihilated, and another 100,000 are maimed for life. How is that a just God? You know, how can you say that God is good? You know, but when you realize absolute is sentient, God is a person, is a personal thing there between you and God, and between you and your relationship with God, and you have a personal accountability towards God. And because he's an absolute sentient, he's an eternal person, because we understand that all the persons that we have an experience with, you know, they're not absolute. So here Prabhupada is saying absolute is sentient. This person is absolute, and that means he's eternal also. That entails being eternal, absolute. And it entails being full of knowledge, you know, and it entails being full of bliss. So the person, if God is just some nebulous cloud or some kind of vague concept up in the air, then how can we understand that God is full of bliss? You know, God has a pastime. He has a lila, you know, and this accounts for all of our perverted emotions, you know, because God has that original in the pure form, you know. So we can understand all these different things with the simple, you know, that simple phrase, God, absolute is sentient, thou hast proved. And in personal calamity, thou hast moved. This is so nice. The impersonal calamity, Prabhupada calls it a calamity. You know, it's a great catastrophe. Impersonal calamity. Those people who present God as being impersonal, it's calamity. And their life is calamitous. You know, their life is a failure. You know, their life is to be understood as being a catastrophe. Because this is the last snare. The last snare, you know. Somehow or other, I can distinctly remember, you know, when I was living up in Morningstar, before Prabhupada came there, I remember reading some books, by some gurus, I won't mention their name, and I thought, yeah, this is sounding really cool, and then after reading them, I was in the garden, and somebody said to me, how are you feeling? I said, I am God! And I didn't feel right about saying that, you know. I said, well, that didn't feel too good, you know. It was a calamity. I said, I am God, you know, because some guru, some, you know, phony guru in a book that I read had said that we are all God. So then when Prabhupada came to Morningstar and he showed us that, you know, we were all dogs and that the holy name was the only way to save us all. So here, Prabhupada is saying that this is a calamity. The absolute ascension thou hast proved, the impersonal calamity thou hast moved. You know, in other words, he has moved it out of the way, you know, removed it. This gives us a life anew and fresh. Worship thy feet, his divine grace. Had you not come, who would have told the message of Krishna forceful and bold? That's your right, you've got the mace, save me a fall in his divine grace. The line of service is drawn by you. It's pleasing and healthy like morning dew, the oldest of all, but in a new dress. Miracle done is divine grace. So that is the poem that we offer today to Bhaktisiddhanta. You know, we can go on forever. I don't want to, you know, belabor the State of the Union here. But we can understand that Srila Prabhupada was an iconoclast taking, you know, following in the footsteps of the original spiritual master our Param Guru, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, and we thank Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati from the bottom of our hearts, that he was so merciful upon Srila Prabhupada and instructed him to speak to the English-speaking people, inspired Srila Prabhupada to come here, and everything else that you see around you, the floor that you're sitting on, is due to Srila Prabhupada's energy and Prabhupada's conviction, you know, that by following the instructions of his guru, that everything auspicious will follow. And it's a fact, you know, everything auspicious has followed. So there is a real nexus between this day and 40 years ago when we first purchased the building. It was a hush-hush thing. And we can see, you know, this photo here that's in your packet. There's some devotees, you know, that were here. Now, this picture was taken approximately 6 months after the day that we're celebrating today. But the devotees had come from a different place. There were some other devotees that had come from afar that weren't residents of New Dwarka. But we look at the picture and we can see Srila Prabhupada in the middle. That's not the Murti of Prabhupada, that's Prabhupada in the middle. And down on the floor in front of Prabhupada in the row on your left-hand side is Bhagavan, who had flown in from the East Coast. And there's Rupanuga, who also flew in the East Coast. And opposite him, sitting on the floor, right on the right side, is Karanda, who was the temple president. And he wasn't the president by then. Dayananda was probably still the president. And behind him is Tamal Krishna, right? That's Tamal Krishna behind him? Karanda, okay. So then you stand up from behind, Tamal Krishna, there's a sinner there. And then behind that sinner, there's Kirtananda behind that sinner. And then opposite the on the other side is Devananda, and behind him is Kartikeya, two sannyasis behind, like that. Now on the right hand side of that sinner, there's Yasodananda. And behind him is the treasurer, Stoka Krishna. And then we move down there beside Yasodananda. Is that Marukanta? Marukanta, he was here this morning, I saw him.
Yeah.
Marukanta, right? Yeah. Yeah, right, he's back there. Okay, yeah. And I saw, I knew it was him. And I don't know everybody's name, you know, then I can fill in some of the names. There's Narada Muni's back there, and Yudhisthira. Yudhi is back there. Is Yudhisthira here? Yeah, he's there, right, with the garland on. He got the deity's garland somehow. And then sitting on, kneeling on the ground, on the far right hand side, there's Mother Ujjala, right? Kind of kneeling up, that's her. And then beside her, kneeling on the ground with the two kids, that's Nandarani. She's the temple president's wife. And such. And you notice that on the left hand side, the Matajis all have this kind of faded saffron on, and the right hand is all bright yellow. Those are the householders. Householders with the bright yellow, and, you know, the Brahmacharinis and the Brahmacharis have the faded polyester. And then there's Nandarani with two children. There's Mother Sachi. And beside her is the first pujari in ISKCON, Shilavati. Shilavati was the first pujari in, he was really the first pujari in ISKCON, but first pujari in Los Angeles Temple. So let's see, the lineage from Shilavati at this temple went from Shilavati to Jayatirtha Maharaj, I think. He was trained up by Shilavati. And Srila Prabhupada sent Jayatirtha to India to study puja at the temple of Radharaman. He didn't send him to the Gaudiya Math. He sent him to Radharaman temple to learn the intricacies of deity worship. And then the original first deity worship book, which was published, Jayatirtha, and it was a lot of the practices that they do at Radharaman, because it's there. So anyways, who is the pujari after Jayatirtha? Was it Ramdas? Was Ramdas Kem? Deepak? Who?
Navadvip.
Oh, right, Navadvip, right, yeah. And who was the pujari after him?
Ramayana.
Huh? Yeah?
It was actually Ramdas.
us.
Yeah, he helped. Ram Das. And he went on for a long time. And then Rabindranath came. So we have good stability. Yes, Madhati. Okay.
The last person to the right is Dhanavir.
Okay, Dhanavir, right?
In case you don't know, I remember him. He was a brahmachari, and for a short time he was married to Mula Prakriti.
Dhanavir, right, yeah.
And then on the right, bottom front, kind of center, is Sachi Devi.
Yeah, yeah, I'm still with, right next to Sachi. Okay. Is Tungabhadra behind her? Is that Tungabhadra? Oh.
And then on the left,
we haven't got to the left yet. We're still on the right.
Okay.
Still on the Pujari. We're on Shulavati. This is nice talking about the lineage of the temple. Because there's also, we have the lineage of the temple presidents.
Yes.
We all know Savas because he's been here forever.
Yes.
He's been Savas. Prabhu Ghi! How many years is it? 20 years now? 24 years! Nobody in the whole of ISKCON can lay that claim. This is what we say here in New Dwarka. We've got the longest standing temple president in the history of ISKCON. Savas Prabhu, 24 years. In the beginning, it was a shorter stint, you know. We had term limits back then. Savas got no term limits. Well, Savas is so good. See, Savas is such a good administrator, and he's such a great president, they changed the rules for him. Just like when Franklin Roosevelt was the president, there was a term limit. You can only be president for two terms, but then Franklin Roosevelt was so good, they extended his term. He went three terms, and further. So anyway, it's like this. Savas has extended the term limit in Los Angeles, New Dwarka. So, but before Savas was Rameshwar?
Vatsal.
Oh, Vatsal, right. Yeah, Vatsal. And then Rameshwar?
No,
Gopalvata. All right. And then who after Gopalvata? Was who?
Well, I think it was Narada Muni. Then there was Tulsi before him.
Yeah. Was Navadvipa? Was Navadvipa a president for a while? Okay. It was Dear Krishna during that time sometime?
Yeah,
Dear Krishna was the president?
Years, for about a couple of years.
Yeah, right? And then before, and then after that, Rameshwar?
It was Dear Krishna from what I remember, and then after Dear Krishna, it was Gopal Bhatta.
Yeah, I'm going back.
After Gopal Bhatta, it was
Vatsal?
Vatsal, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And then in between all that, there was Narada Muni, and then there was also in the early days, it was Brahma, of course, and also, he's living in Vrindavan now, is his name? He was here, I can't remember. No.
Well, Dayananda was the first president.
Yeah.
Dayananda was first, and then Dayananda stayed as the first president, but Garga Muni came, and he was more or less, he was the hands-on kind of person, the financial advisor. But Prabhupada wanted to keep Dayananda as the temple president because he originally came to Los Angeles from San Francisco and started the temple with Nandarani. In the beginning, there was only two people in Aniruddha. It was Nandarani, there was Dayananda, and then there was Aniruddha. And then Mukunda Maharaj came down with Janaki and, a couple of devotees. But there was just two or three devotees here for a long time. In fact, when we all arrived with the World Sankirtan bus, there was only two or three devotees in the temple. So then the temple built up, and we went to La Cienega, and so then Dayananda was there. So there we have the people on the right-hand side. Is there anybody on the right-hand side that can be identified by anyone? Who? I said Kirtananda, yeah. No sinful guy. That was Stoka Krishna. We have Stoka Krishna, the treasurer. Then moving on over to the left-hand side, beside Devadatta, was Nanda Kumar was there, right? He's right there. And behind him is Mohanananda. And up above him is Kesava. Kesava is the brother of Karanda, the president, sitting on the floor there. Kunjabihari, right, the big one. Yeah. Down on the ground, there's Kausalya. She's in the middle. Beside her is Srimate. And can I identify any more of those women down there? Where's that? Back there, okay. Oh, and holding the pitcher is Shastri, right? Shastri? And then behind her is Dayananda, who is the first temple president. Dayananda. So anyways, this is a nice picture, you know, Srila Prabhupada. The history behind this picture was that Prabhupada was going to India. He was going away, you know, back to India in 1970. And there was a cloud of controversy there. And because 6 months earlier we had just got into the temple, within the 6 or 7 months, some of the devotees fell prey to familiarity breeds contempt. That's the old saying. Familiarity breeds contempt. And that's also true with associating and being around too intimately with the spiritual master, acting too intimately with the spiritual master. Sometimes the Prabhupada's god brothers would criticize him. They would say, fools rush in where angels dare not tread. Because Prabhupada sometimes would walk with Bhaktisiddhanta and converse with him, you know, in a more familiar fashion. But Bhaktisiddhanta wanted that. He wanted to converse with Srila Prabhupada because he had plans for Prabhupada. He had special plans. Because when Bhaktisiddhanta visited the temple in Bombay, Prabhupada had been instrumental in going around and finding a place to rent, coming up with the money to pay for the rent, and bringing all sorts of rich industrialists to visit the temple and to donate money. So all the other sadhus that were there, you know, Sridhar Maharaj and Sangha Maharaj and all these different sadhus, they were sadhus, but they weren't mixing with the city folk so much. You know, they didn't know the idea of how to, they weren't completely, conversant with the yukta vairagya, you know, sentiment of utilizing everything for the service of the Lord. So when Bhakti Siddhanta visited Bombay and he was so impressed that they have made such a nice temple here and everything. And so the god brother said, Abe Babu, he should be the president here. They were all saying to Bhakti Siddhanta, he should be the president. You know, he is the main person here. And Bhakti Siddhanta was saying, no, I have something special for him. I have a special assignment for him. You know, he is not going to be just a provincial, you know, temple president in Bombay. I have a special assignment. Yeah. So we all know what the special assignment was. So anyways, so some of the devotees had fallen prey to familiarity breeds contempt, and Srila Prabhupada was a little bit offended, and he wanted to teach the disciples a lesson, and also he wanted to continue on with his program of reinvigorating the preaching in India. Because when Srila Prabhupada was in India, he was constantly asking different, rich men and men to donate one of their sons, you know, for the preaching. And they were saying, oh, no, Swamiji, he has to go to college, we're sending him to London, and he's going to be an engineer, and he's going to do this, and he's going to do that. We can't afford one. So Prabhupada couldn't get any of the people of India to take Krishna consciousness seriously because they thought it was some kind of a primitive, you know, religion, and we had to be modern, you know, we had to be more modern. So, like that, they wouldn't give their sons. So Prabhupada's idea was that we'll go to America and the West, and we'll, all the devotees will be there, and then we'll bring the devotees back, the Westerners back to India, and then they'll be impressed. And now we see, you know, that strategy has worked. You know, I was just talking to Savas the other day about Bombay and Chupati, and so much enthusiasm. You know, there's so much enthusiasm, you know, amongst the Indian congregation, you know, and they completely appreciated how Westerners, embrace Krishna consciousness, and so they've taken to it, you know, now. So anyways, we were leaving. This picture probably was taken in August, the latter part, a day or two before we left. So I thought, well, let's get a group picture together. So we all assembled there in the front. You know, but during this controversy, Prabhupada had called different devotees. You know, he had called Kirtananda, and he had called Samal Krishna, and called Bhagavan, and Rupanuga, and those people weren't Los Angeles devotees. You know, they came from different places. So it was just a couple of days before Prabhupada was leaving. So we left in August, and the party was seven, or became seven. It was Srila Prabhupada, and then there was Kirtananda, and that sinner, and then there was Devananda and Kartikeya, and then Tamal Krishna went. Also, that's 2, 4, and then Tamal Krishna. And then Banu, we picked up Banu in Japan, Bhakti Bruce. So we arrived in India in September 1970 with a party of seven. So anyway, so this temple that Srila Prabhupada inaugurated 40 years ago is very important. It's a tirtha. It's a sacred place because Srila Prabhupada lived here. Of any other place outside of India, he lived here more than any other place. More than London, more than, Paris, more than New York. He stayed more here, more time, and more extended. You know, he would stay here for months and months and months because he had his own facilities here. His translation was going on nicely, take his morning walks. And he was setting this up as as the ideal place. And I just was reading one letter, you know, that I have from Prabhupada regarding this, and it captures the sentiment that was here. Where is it? Underneath. I thought I had it so together, marked for the clothes pin and everything. Anyways, the letter that Srila Prabhupada wrote to me, I can't find. Oh yeah, Prabhupada. This is dated March 1970. He says, please accept my humble obeisance. I beg to acknowledge receipt of your letter dated 18th of March 1970. I have already chanted the beads of Srimati Maitihili Dasi, and I hope you have received them. She was disciple, Srila Prabhupada's disciple in San Francisco. Prabhupada says, I was very busy since a few days on account of purchasing this new church. And today we have finished the payment and other documentary activities. This morning we have paid $50,000 down payment. Gagra Muni was to take from me, from my book fund, $20,000. But in the meantime, he has managed to collect, instead of $20,000, so the boys here have taken a great risk by purchasing this church property. But I think it was worthwhile to secure this property. When Krishna has given us this a chance, I hope he will give us a chance also to liquidate the balance amount as soon as possible. He said, in the latest verse, he says, last time you came here, I was very much encouraged to see you. Similarly, whenever you find some time, if you come for a day or two, you will be able to suggest improvements here, as well as you will be able to take improvements from here and therefore and introduce them in your temple and others. That was Prabhupada's whole sentiment. When he got this property, all the disciples, it became a big a revolving door of disciples coming from all over the world. And he wanted to show them the proper way to execute Krishna consciousness when we have the facility. When the facility is here, when we don't have to worry about the neighbors up above us or the neighbors down below us, you know, we don't have to worry about the limited facility here. This is the way we do it. And I remember how proud I was, because when I joined the temple, my parents were very, staunch Catholics. So when I left home in 1967, they sent the priest out to follow me, Father Murray. So Father Murray was an Indian missionary. He had worked in India as a missionary for so many years. So when I was living up at Morningstar, he came up there because he was keeping tabs on me for my mother. This is a motherly affection. They want to know what their kid's doing. And I had left home abruptly. I just kind of one day I just walked out the door and never came back. I walked out the door to go to school, and then I called from Denver. I walked out the door in Boston, to go to school, with my books over my back. And my mother saw me go down the street, and then a couple of days later, I called from Denver, and I said, "Ma, I'm going to take a few months off of school." So I was in my third year, of university, and I'm going to take a few months off and try to, straighten my head out, try to get an appreciation of what the world was happening. Because 1967 was a very tumultuous year. So she sent the priest out after me. So he came up to Morningstar, and we were all up there. And, he was looking around. Oh, my God. So then the next time he came through, I was in the temple. I was in the San Francisco temple. And, he really couldn't understand that, especially Lord Jagannath. He couldn't understand that because he had all these ideas of what, deity worship happened in India, and, he was a Catholic priest. So I remember feeling a little embarrassed, ashamed. I said, how can I boast that, I landed on my feet and here I am in this nice, organization. I mean, I appreciated it, but the surroundings were very meager. It was a little small, the whole temple was probably as big as the deity room. It's about as big as the deity room. No exaggeration. Our whole temple was as big as the deity room. Going that way, lengthwise, And then down below we had brahmachari quarters. And the brahmacharinis slept in the parking lot in a van. And they had to wait, at the back window to climb in the window to take a shower in the morning after all the brahmacharis had finished. So I had one shower, and all the Matajis were out in the back parking lot of Kizar Stadium there, and they want to come in to take the shower, and all the brahmacharis are taking the shower and trying to get out to Arti. So it was a very meager place, and it was an old building, and we didn't own it, and we just owned this little place. You can go there today and see it's a little laundromat. In fact, the laundromat is more opulent than the temple was. So I remember feeling a little, this is where we live. He was looking down. But then he came later and he saw this place. Then I was feeling very proud, it was a good feeling. I didn't have to be embarrassed about anything. And I remember Mataji all saying, "Yes, we can get married in the new temple." because before you had to invite the parents would come out, and there wouldn't be any chairs in the temple. We had to rent the chairs, and it would be, rent five chairs, so the parents could sit on a chair and, give them, the prasadam, no forks, and no spoons, just like eat it with your hand. Yeah. We weren't too aware, of how to deal. But we weren't the evangelical angels at Bhakti Siddhanta was at all. Our preaching was crude. But when we got this new church, it was such a great thing. And Prabhupada also, when he, the first day, on this very day, when he came, is Sukadev here? Sukadev was actually here that day. I've been looking for him for the last 2 days, trying to get him to speak. Anyways, you can talk to Sukadev. He was here, and Ujjala was here, but it was, we didn't want anybody to, they call it the expression, fritz the deal. You know what that means? I mean, like, we didn't want anybody to screw up the deal, and they didn't want to let it out of the bag that we've got this temple on. And Garga Muni, he didn't let any of the devotees know. I mean, Garga Muni was kind of shrouded in secrecy. Matajis would have to go blindfolded in the car to clean Prabhupada's room. But he didn't want to let him know. He didn't want to let him know where Prabhupada lived. So it's kind of like, you know, one of those CIA movies, you know? And the guy goes to the secret place. The Matadiva had to be blindfolded in the car. And they get in the car and they blindfold them and take them out to Prabhupada's quarters. And they get to the quarters, they open up their thing. And they don't look out the window. You want to make sure that they didn't identify any, you know, anything around the outside environment. And then when they finish cleaning Prabhupada, they'll blindfold them again and take them back to the temple. So it's kind of paranoid, you know. It's kind of a paranoid, you know, thing. But it was the same feeling that they had, the same feeling that they had towards the temple. They don't want anybody, any devotees, to know, because, you know, the devotees would be notorious for, you know, kind of like coming over here, you know, with one flip-flop on or something. Hey, this is our new flirt! Hey, this is our new flirt! Let's have kirtan on the front stairs! Before the real estate agent even, you know, closed the deal, and then the owners would come, you know, because the place is owned by a church, because we had the same problem in Australia. That we were going to buy this big church. We wanted to buy this big church, and then the church, the Catholic Church, found that we were devotees. And they said, you know, we'll sell you the church under one consideration, that you have to tear the church down. You have to tear the church down. They were so envious that they didn't want us to occupy the same building that, you know, that they had. You know, it was a big, huge church and a big complex, and, well, you know, it was as big as the whole street out there. You know, all the property that we have is huge compound wall. So we wanted to buy it. And Prabhupada actually saw the church and everything. He said, yes, this will do. And, you know, Prabhupada, because that, in those days, the book trust was really flush. And so we started negotiation, but then they found out that we were devotees, and then they didn't do it. So this is what Garga Muni was afraid of. That some devotee would come over here and start camping out, you know, and maybe pitch a tent in the front yard, you know. And if anybody objected, say, yeah, it belongs to us now. You know, get out of here. This is our place. So, but after, so nobody really knew. And then Uttala was telling, like, the news got out. All right, we're going to have we have a temple now. And Prabhupada wants us all, you know, to come. And it was really, it happened really fast. It wasn't like a long negotiation and everything. Because I have letters from Prabhupada about a couple of weeks or a week before this date. And he was saying to me in the letter, we have this place, talking about La Cienega Boulevard, and we have been here for 3 years, and we can stay here for 3 years more. You know, it doesn't make any difference. You know, our main business is Sankirtan. So at that point, he wasn't speaking, he would have spoken it to me, because I flew down before and gave him some money for the down payment, but he didn't let on to any of the devotees. So finally, the devotees were told, come on over, come on over. So they all came over on that special day, and Srila Prabhupada, took the picture of Bhaktisiddhanta, and they brought Prabhupada's Vyasa-san over, and he put Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta's picture on the Vyasa-san, and they did the artik, and he gave a lecture, and then he proceeded to give the devotees a tour of the temple, of the buildings. There were just two buildings, this building and the next building where the restaurant is now, in the front lot where Ratna, you know, puts the Rath Yatra cars. There's three buildings like that. So Prabhupada gave a tour. He said, this will be, you know, the temple room, you know, where we have the Fate Museum. That was where the original temple room was. Prabhupada said, this will be the temple room. So Prabhupada said, we said to Prabhupada, why don't we have a temple room here, in this room? Because this room wasn't like anything like you see it now. This room was the original sanctuary for the church, and they had pews in the church. Pews, you know, long wooden pews, not just fold-up chairs, pews, long permanent pews, stuck in the ground like that, like a regular church. And then they had a platform there, and on top of the platform they had like a pulpit where a preacher would speak. He would speak from the pulpit. And then on the other side, on the right-hand side, a big pipe organ. Big pipe organ. Big one. Up to the ceiling. Vishnu John used to get in there and play the pipe organ. He loved this. Vishnu now was a musician, you know, that's a musician's dream. Yeah, the big old pipe organ, the windows are shaking, right? Playing the bhajan like that. So, Prabhupada said, no, we don't want to disturb that room. We want to keep that the way it is. You know, he wanted to keep the church the way it was. He felt that, well, people, when they come to the temple, they can feel comfortable because it's like a church. Keep the organ, keep the pulpit, keep the pews, and people can do it. And then, but the temple room will be in that other room like that. So he said, this will be the temple, and that's how it was. Where Fate Museum is now, that's where the temple was. We had, you know, we had the, people have seen the pictures of the three altars and the four symbols of Vishnu up above the different altars, and Gauranitai, and Radha Krishna, and Lord Jagannath was there. And Prabhupada told the devotees how they should stand, and the Vyasasana up at the end. That's how Prabhupada designed it. The Vyasasana up at the end of the... In the beginning, when we had a temple in San Francisco, New York, we had the Vyasasana like this to the side. But when Prabhupada, you know, laid out the temple, he said, no, the Vyasasana should be up at the back of the temple. And then on either side, the devotees should line up in rows. And then say, look, that way the guru, and that way the god. Guru, god, guru, god, like that, dancing back and forth. He said, but keep the aisle open, because I want to see too. So, Prabhupada said, keep the aisle open, so, like that. And, so this was the, you know, temple room. Eventually, it was made into the temple room, and all, you know, we all know the history, and this temple has been through earthquakes. Those who are new devotees here don't understand that at one time it was all marble, green onyx, you know, marble, like stone, all on the walls of this temple, just like the center, you know, the lotus in the middle here, and the sun. It's all green onyx. There's big green archways there, out of onyx, and a huge earthquake came to Los Angeles and shook the whole place at Mangalartik time, right? And all the marble fell off the walls. It fell off the archways. The whole temple, they had to take the deities out of the temple and put them in the front lawn. Deity was on the front lawn, and then they went into Batsal's bus for a while, right? You know, but so this temple has gone through major, you know, changes like that. Besides that, the original, when Prabhupada gave the tour, he was saying, now, where the Fate Museum was, that would be the temple. This would be, you know, stay as it was. And then he pointed, and the Matajis would stay. They were living in where the restaurant is now. And the Brahmacharis lived upstairs, you know, upstairs where the shop is, where Govinda's is, and where the Mayapur's office is and all that. There was a whole shower complex up there. Brahmachari stayed up top. Mataji stayed down where the store was. And Prabhupada instructed the devotees to make the garden there. And, you know, and eventually the temple was opened here. And Prabhupada said, because in those days real estate wasn't so expensive in Los Angeles, he said, whatever, anything comes available on the street, buy it. You can buy as many as properties as you can. Because he knew the community, you know, was going to expand. And expand it did. And Prabhupada brought the BBT here, and the artists came here, and Spiritual Sky was here, and book distribution was going on like crazy in the airport, you know, and, Golden Avatar was here, and, you know, the Sura B store was over there, and the school, the children, the school, before, you know, Bhaktivedanta, you know, BV opened up, you know, we had the big school here, and my kids went to school here as well, the nursery school, regular school. So there's been so many transformations that have gone on in this temple in the last 40 years, but it's all coming from the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada gave us a nice place, you know, where we could worship, and a place we could be proud of, you know, we could invite people, and, you know, they can be impressed with the, you know, the full presentation and the opulence of Krishna consciousness. You know, not that we are, you know, trying to, you know, impress people with our opulence, but with the opulence of Krishna, you know, and the pleasing cleanliness of the temple and the atmosphere of the temple. So, on this occasion, I think we've spoken enough. But we'd like to take the opportunity to express our gratitude to our Param Guru, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj, to our spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, for taking care of us and giving us a chance to go back to home, back to Godhead. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. And prasadam is at 12:30, I think. Yeah. Yeah.